Australian True Crime is an independent podcast. If you help us, we can continue creating and improving our content. That's our promise to you. To support us, simply hit the follow button on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This will help us grow and ensure you're notified as soon as a new episode is released.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to Aboriginal elders emerging. The following podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature and is not suitable for children.
I isolated myself through choice because I learned that people are very judgmental. And as soon as I'd say something about Adam's case and with, you know, committing suicide and the coroner's handing down these findings, I've had people write down to my cousin say, Lynn, just accept it. He committed suicide. So you learn not to talk about it, to protect yourself from other people.
That's Lynn Cecil, who won't accept that her son Adam committed suicide. She believes he was murdered, and she's fought for 15 years through two inquests, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to prove it. In this podcast, Lynn will explain all the reasons why she believes her son was murdered. And it's up to us, not necessarily to decide whether or not we believe her, but at what point we'd be ready to get over it. If, God forbid, we were ever in her position.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
Lynn Cecil was a single mum working two jobs and raising two sons in Sydney's Sutherland Shire. By the early 2000s, it seemed to have all worked out. Both boys had grown into young men she could be proud of, and they both still liked to spend time with her pretty much every day. Lynn and the boys had a friendly relationship with their dad, George, but she'd achieved a level of financial independence that allowed her to finally get that pool in the backyard they'd all dreamed of. Life was looking good for Lynn Cecil and her boys, Adam and Mark.
Oh, too true. Yes. Adam, when George left, he met another lady and left, went to Apia in Western Samoa. He was with the airlines. And Adam really took the responsibility of the man of the house.
That's lovely.
And assisted with Mark, because Mark was a special needs child. So Adam took the lead. He was marvellous. I mean, the lawn mowing, the odd jobs around the house, absolutely everything. And to give you some idea of his sense of humour, I was standing at the sink one night, and I always said I'd be so concerned when they were stronger than me. And this particular evening, I said to both of them, I said, will one of you please take the rubbish out? And with that, Adam came up, picked me up under my arms, took me out and sat me on the gutter.
So. Oh, that's gorgeous. And when you say Mark was special needs, what do you mean by that?
Mark was born with a hair lip, cleft palate and H-type fistula. He was in the Prince of Wales Hospital for some 10 months. I lost count. I'd say he probably had about 14 operations. And he's now 41, a daddy of one with the second one on the way.
Oh, that's wonderful.
When they went to school, then Adam came extremely protective of Mark.
There was that moment there when they were sort of, what were they, late teens? When Adam, what happened? He got a bit rebellious.
Over the first girlfriend, which was Mandy, that's when our first problems occurred. It was his first love. They both went to the same school. As you know, I'm divorced, and I was divorced at that point. And the father of the girlfriend made approaches towards me, which I rejected. And that's where the problems came in, that he put a knife between, not literally, metaphorically, between Adam and Mandy. And then Adam blamed me for the relationship coming to an end. But probably Adam would have been, 16 then, year 10? By the time he was 18, 19, we had rebuilt a good relationship, a good rapport.
You were always a close family, certainly the three of you. And I love it, the way you're talking in your stat deck about him moving close to you and rocking in every night and saying what's for dinner, and if it sounded good, he'd stay and watch TV with you guys afterwards.
I don't know if I can say this or not. I won't actually say the F word, but he used to walk in the front door and he walked into the kitchen, opened the fridge, asked me what we were having for dinner, and I'd tell him, looking in the fridge, he'd say, look, there's no effing food in here. then he'd waltz off home, which was only 5 minutes around the road.
But he bought a property quite young, didn't he?
Oh, yes. I think he was probably 19 when he bought his first townhouse in Sutherland. Yeah, and then he bought an excavator because he went into business, and that was something like 200,000, but they earn good money. Mike Tickner, who put my pool in here, Mike took Adam on as a casual before he had a driver's license, so he could drive an excavator before he could drive a car, and he could dig pools.
He was a tradie, Adam. He was like a lifelong tradie.
Oh, yes.
And very highly skilled, obviously, and very hardworking.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely.
So when did he meet this group of people who in the end became sort of a shadowy kind of crew?
I don't know where they met, but they lived locally, so the local lads. And when I put the swimming pool in, I had an open house policy. So everyone used to accumulate at my place. Jane, Matthew, Aaron from opposite, young lad from down the road, they were all here. Or when trouble appeared was when Adam met Nicole Timms. That's when everything started to fall apart, and Adam moved into that unit down at Cronulla with Shane. I learned very early in the piece that Nicole's father was extremely protective of his daughter, and I never, ever got on with him, never. I always personally felt that because I was divorced, I was on the outer.
Oh, okay. So then maybe you can, because most of us in Australia don't know about the Shire. It's one of those funny places, isn't it? People from the Shire don't understand how the rest of us don't know about it. Is the Shire conservative, or certainly was it when we're talking sort of 15, 20 years ago? Was it? Did it have that conservative vibe about it?
Well, it did. I came here in 1969. And, well, just to give you an indication, I know the girls up at the local shops, and I was talking to Tracy one day, and it was just small talk, and she actually said to me, she's lived in the Shire all of her life, and she said, "Lynn, I'll give you a warning." I said, "What's that, Tracy?" She said, "Never have an affair, because everyone will know about it."
Yeah.
That's definitely the way I felt. And I never had any connection with them whatsoever until the night Adam died. I wasn't included in anything.
Now, before Adam died, there was another incident. There was another hospitalisation. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, that was, yes, that was Christmas 2004. And Adam was at my place at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, that afternoon. And he came in and he looked really great. And he was looking forward to Christmas Eve. They were all going out to dinner. And he was very smartly dressed. And anyway, he wandered off at about 6 o'clock to go and meet the rest of the gang that were going out to dinner. And that was fine. We'd arranged what was going to happen on Christmas Day, that I was going to call into his place at Cronulla and see him and Nicole and exchange presents and say Merry Christmas. Anyway, it must have been about 7 a.m. on Christmas morning, and Shane arrived at my place. And I said to Mark, my youngest son, I said, "Oh, Marcus, that's funny, Shane's here." So he came in and he said, "Lynn, don't worry, there's been an accident, but Adam's all right." So I looked, why, what happened? He's in St. George Hospital. So he didn't really elaborate apart from telling me that he's all right. So, of course, then I phoned Adam at the hospital, who was in excruciating pain. And then the story came out. Shane actually told me that Adam was out to dinner, he went home early, and then he phoned Nicole at about midnight, and Shane answered Nicole's phone and wouldn't hand the phone over to Nicole because he said, "There's too much noise here and you can't hear." So the first story is that then Shane and Nicole went round to Nicole and Adam's unit to find Adam on the ground. And then the story was that he attempted to commit suicide, which is absolute rubbish. Then if you read through some of the statements, Shane's statement contradicts itself half a dozen times. Now, I never, ever believed that Adam attempted to commit suicide. I have my own theory on what happened that night. I believe a fight broke out and he was pushed over the balcony. That's what I believe. From that day on, Adam was never, ever left by himself. He never came to my house. He was always accompanied by Shane or Nicole. When he was in hospital, he was never left by himself. When I visited him down at Tim's place, because Kerry said, you know, or he was invited to stay there post-op, Adam was never left by himself. There was always someone circling around. So I believe, and it might sound strange, but I believe he was virtually possessed by that family in the sense that they were frightened that he might spill the beans as to what truly happened that night. It is the strangest thing, Michelle, believe me.
Yes, so he's gone from arriving at your house every night to check the fridge to never coming to your home alone again.
Correct.
Literally overnight, literally after that Christmas.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah. And this family that Adam's staying with, this is Nicole's family.
Correct. This was Nicole's family.
So you would go and visit him at these people's home.
Yep.
But they were always home when you were there?
There was always someone there, mainly Cole's mother, but she was never sociable towards me. I'd take Adam's post around, but she was always just loitering. She was mopping the floor or she was doing something 10 feet away, but she never, ever sat down and spoke to Adam and me.
After his hospitalisation that first time, was he given any treatment? Did the hospital send him home with a mental health treatment plan or anything like that?
I'd asked because it was so strange. By the way, when he was in hospital, there was always a member of Nicole's family there because everyone had said that he tried to commit suicide. I'd actually asked if he could see a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and he did see a psychologist, okay? There was nothing untoward about the consultation with his psychologist. And then also after I found a contact, it was a psychiatrist that Adam had also seen, and he'd actually said, or when he wrote back to me, that Adam had absolutely and utterly no, what's the correct word, ideal. It's towards suicide.
Suicidal ideation.
Ideations, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely and utterly no suicide ideations. Mm. So that even more said to me, there's a cover-up here. There's a cover-up. And I believe that they were protecting Shane from being charged with grievous bodily harm.
Who was Shane to them? Is he? He's a family friend?
Yeah.
Okay. So why are they protecting Shane?
From what I can make out, Shane was a friend of Nicole's before Nicole started going out with Adam. And another thing that comes into the equation, Adam was against illicit drugs, but they were into ecstasy and party drugs. So that was a worry. And that is also in the report from the psychiatrist that Adam saw when he was in hospital, that one of Adam's main concerns is when Nicole goes out with friends that she will partake in drugs or ecstasy. I know. And I know that is true because my younger son, Mark, had been offered ecstasy in the past and declined.
Okay, by that crew.
Yeah.
How old was Adam during this first hospitalisation, this first fall, whatever we're calling it?
26. That was December 2004 and he died and I had him cremated on his 27th birthday.
We want to thank everyone who's ever supported us through Patreon, including those who are no longer able to do so. It's tough times, so if you're in a position to support us with a $5 monthly pledge now, please consider doing it. Patreon keeps us going and helps us help people like Lynn tell their stories. Thank you to these patrons, Rosemary, Tina Hall, Jessica Lorimer, Kathleen, and Vanessa Cameron.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Coming up on Australian True Crime, we take a look at the basic questions that remain uninvestigated and unanswered about Adam's death. But first, Lynn takes us through the very strange period between the first fall and the last night of her son Adam's life.
What was his recovery period like after that first hospitalisation? Did he get back to work?
Oh, yeah, he was back at work, I believe, by the April.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, oh, made an incredible recovery. And also I found, it came in the post after he passed away, that he'd done some OH&S course for excavation during that period of time. So that's an indication of his determination.
Yeah, and his ambition. And so he didn't want to waste the time.
No.
Mm.
I don't know how the course was done, but he got a certificate for it. So
so motivated. What came next then? There was a crisis in his relationship with Nicole.
Well, it sounds very trivial, and I can remember Adam was here, and it was only a matter of a couple of weeks before Adam died that he said he'd asked Nicole, because he wanted to move from the place at Cronulla, and they wanted to buy a house. And Nicole reneged on that, and that was the end of the story. The next thing I know is he's dead.
But it was your understanding that she ended the relationship?
Yes.
How did you find out that he had been hurt again on the 3rd of August? What happened on the 3rd of August from your perspective?
Well, he was here in the afternoon at about 5 o'clock, and I got home from work, and my house behind me, there's the fire trail, and I got home and there was Mark, Adam and Shane down on the fire trail having a beer. So I said, oh, hi, came up, got myself a light beer, went down, was having a chat with them, and that was on the 3rd of August, and it's Adam's birthday on the 9th, so I actually said to him, oh, what are we going to do for your birthday? And he shrugged his shoulders and I said, oh, it's going to be a romantic night with Nicole. And he said, no, that's not going to happen. So anyway, I didn't pursue that conversation any further.
Okay, Mum.
So George, Adam's dad, tried to ring and he didn't answer the phone. He just passed a comment, oh, well, Dad's a bit early for my birthday. And anyway, then Shane asked me to sign some documents as I'm a JP, so I did that. And then I said, oh, so I'm going around to Bangor. And at that point, the three of them were still down on the fire trail. So I went into the Bangor shopping centre, came out. As I came just around the corner of Bangaroo Street, I saw Adam at the end of the street. He was turning right. I was coming into the street and Shane Jessamine was right behind him. So I flashed, Adam flashed. Off they went. Didn't think any more of it. He was a bit upset and said, well, I'm not going to have a romantic evening with Nicole. So the next thing I know, my mobile goes, I didn't get to it. My phone landline went, I didn't get to it.
What time was this? How much later?
This would have been about 8 o'clock, 10 past 8.
Okay.
So then I phoned Adam's mobile and a police officer answered the phone. So I said, yes, it's Lynn Cecil. Can I speak to Adam, please? He said, no, it's Constable so-and-so. I can't remember his name. Constable so-and-so here. there has been an accident. We believe your son jumped off the roof of the Cronulla complex. The ambulance is here and he's on his way to Sutherland Hospital. So they immediately assumed that Adam had jumped off the roof. And that followed all the way through, in spite of the fact I tried to tell Senior Constable Massey by Friday, no way in the world did Adam commit suicide and no way in the world did he get onto that roof. But no one would listen to me. No one.
Did they assume that or did someone tell them that? Were there any witnesses to his... I don't know the Cronulla complex. How public is that?
Oh, it's in Ozone Street. Just one of right in the centre.
It sounds public. The complex. It sounds public. So were there any witnesses? And it's 8 o'clock at night when you've been notified. So it's early. Were there any witnesses that saw him jump?
No. There was a witness that saw him drinking in the garage with a mate at about 7:30
at home.
Yes. And that fellow was identified by one of the residents of the Cronulla complex at the first coronial inquest. And Coroner Paul McMahon simply suppressed his name, never to be mentioned again.
Right.
The guy that spoke to him, Stuart, he just said, "Oh, good day, mate, how are you?" And they were only acquaintances because they lived in the same complex. And Adam replied, "Oh," I said, "I've never been better."
So how far is Adam's home where he was drinking at 7:30 with a friend from where he was found by the ambulance, the Cronulla complex? How far is that?
Oh, it's just around the corner. His unit was facing Ozone Street. The driveway comes down to the left of the complex and his body was found halfway down the driveway.
Of the complex?
Yeah.
Like how far a walk do you reckon?
Maximum 50 metres.
Oh, okay.
Be less than that.
Okay.
Be less than that, yeah.
So no one's actually seen it happen, but the police just guessed that that's how he ended up on the ground before they've had any post-mortem or anything? Now, I'm reading here in your submissions, by the way, it says that on the night Adam died, on the night of the 3rd of August, police attended the scene and they initially regarded it as a crime scene.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, specialist crime scene police attended, as did on-call detectives. The area was cordoned off. Persons who were in the area were asked to line up and their particulars were taken. They started door knocking. They did all of the stuff that you do, but then information was obtained that suggested Adam may have jumped from his balcony in December 2004. So someone then has provided them with that information that seems to have changed their thinking. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I believe that everything changed when they entered the unit, which I believe was about 11:30, and they found a so-called suicide note. It was marked "Will. I, Adam Cecil, hereby leave everything to Mark Cecil, the strongest person I know." And it was meant to have been signed and dated by Adam on the 3rd of the 8th, 2005. Now, when you think of it, Adam left here, they say he left here at about 5:45. He would have been home by about 6:15. He'd had quite a lot to drink. How would he write notes? So either when he was inebriated, it was under duress, or someone else wrote it.
Did you have an opportunity to have it looked at in terms of handwriting or anything like that?
Well, I paid a specialist and they said, yes, Adam wrote it.
Okay.
Now, also, it was meant to have been sent a text message that said, it's all your fault. There was a text message. It was to his father, George.
So the suggestion is that for whatever reason, Adam was ruminating over his life and he was depressed. And his last act was to send his father a text message saying, it's all your fault, before he threw himself off the roof.
Yeah.
Did that message ring true in any way to George in terms of any conversation they had ever had or?
Well, like me, I mean, George and Adam had never exchanged text messages. We always got on the phone and phoned each other.
And did they have any ongoing dialogue about it being your fault? Like, did it make sense in any way?
No. I think George was extremely hurt, but he was extremely hurt about a lot of things, you know, because it was absolutely and utterly horrendous because everyone tried to put the focus on George and myself, A, for being divorced, and B, for being such bad parents.
Mm. When you say everyone, specifically?
Well, specifically the people I've been talking about. The morning that I was trying to arrange Adam's funeral, and I ended up with Nicole and everyone here, that a couple of them requested to be here, and George, and I was trying to work out the bearers to carry the coffin. And I said about George, Nicole looked him straight in the eye and said, Adam hated you. I mean, the whole thing is just so horrendous. And even at the first coronial inquest, when we had these people as witnesses, they were bagging me so much as a mother. I was a terrible, terrible mother, you know. They were bagging me so much. My solicitor at that point, who was David Barrow, turned around and said to me one day, well, the hearing went 4 days. He said, how do you listen to this, Lynn? I said, David, they didn't live in my house. So the focus from all of these so-called friends, I think, bagged George and myself to take the focus off them.
I'm just noticing here too that no officers attended the post-mortem. So obviously they'd reached their conclusion already.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. But I've even got a couple of lines out of the New South Wales Police Handbook. Suicides, do not presume suicide, and bear in mind evidence presented to the coroner must be sufficient to conclusively prove it.
Yep, and I'm reading here, no real effort was made to determine precisely how Adam accessed the roof. No statement was sought from the last person recorded as having seen him alive. No statement sought from the first person to find him in the driveway. No statement sought from Senior Constable Yates, the crime scene examiner.
She didn't even look over the fence. There was an old paling fence adjoining the property, and Adam's body was found just within, probably a metre of the fence, and I believe that he was thrown over the fence. And also I have the autopsy photos, and he's got lacerations down his thigh, down his face, and you can see on his hands where he's tried to grab something. And she didn't even look over the fence. They decided he'd committed suicide, end of story. But what I don't understand, Michelle, how it has gone through two coronial inquests. Now, the Supreme Court quashed the first inquest. How come in the second inquest is still handed down a finding that Adam jumped from a height unknown?
It seems to me you have your suspicions about specific people who may have been involved in both events. Have any of them had any other records of violence, any convictions or anything?
Not to my knowledge.
How long ago was the last inquest?
2013.
7 years ago now. How have you I mean, have you found a way to live with it, or are you still campaigning?
Well, I'm still campaigning, and it was late last year that I was summoned to do jury duty.
Oh.
And you can imagine, how could I? How could I? I couldn't do jury duty. So I went and saw my local GP, and I was exempt from doing jury duty on medical grounds due to being traumatised for so many years over Adam's death. Now, I'm traumatised by the justice system. Mm. I've been on a seesaw for 15 years, up, down, up, down, up, down, and once I was excused on medical grounds, I decided to start writing letters again. So I wrote to the Commissioner of Police, Michael Fuller, and I requested that a police advocate be appointed so I could discuss what's the next step. Mentally, it's horrendous. So I met with two police officers probably April, and then the next thing I know, I get a letter from the superintendent by the name of Box. Okay, yeah, it's dated the 19th of March. Dear Mrs. Cecil, I refer to your letter to Commissioner Fuller on the 23rd of January 2020 regarding the death of your son, Adam Cecil, on the 3rd of August 2015. He got that wrong, didn't he? Your correspondence referred to this command for attention. As you are aware, Detective Sergeant Parsons and Detective Senior Constable Prince met with you on February the 5th, 2020, in order to discuss your concerns. I understand you indicated you were not happy with a coronial inquest finding handed down by Deputy State Coroner Dillon on the 29th of August 2013. In that regard, I recommend you make representations to the State Coroner about other possible avenues of investigation. The State Coroner will then decide if any further police action is required. So silence prevails. I believe that Adam had to be silenced because he knew too much about a drug ring within the Sutherland Shire. There is a reason he had to be silenced. I think the only way I can sum it up is it's something you never get over. You learn to live with it. There is corruption. I've learnt a lot. It cost me a lot of money, but I have learnt a lot. All I wanted, all I ever, ever wanted was justice for Adam. And I think the hardest thing is knowing that the perpetrators that bashed him that night or whatever they did are still walking the streets.
Thank you to Lynn Cecil for sharing your story with us. If you have a story you think we'd be interested in, or if there's an Australian true crime you think we should look into, please let us know on Facebook. Thank you to these patrons: Jody, Justine McLeod, Maddie Davidson, Belinda Hilton, Cheyenne Eve, Kim Gatians, and Kelly Booley. And thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime, made in association with the Acast Creator Network. We'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.